Holiday season is upon us, and if you're still searching for gifts, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S. Many are crafted by independent artists and small businesses, so every gift feels special and thoughtfully chosen, like the MLB Perfect Catch coaster set, which can turn any table into a home run display. Uncommon Goods has something for everyone and every occasion. From moms and dads to kids and teens, from birthdays to the holidays to anniversaries, you'll find unforgettable gifts that are anything but ordinary. When you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Every purchase is a chance to choose something remarkable and feel good about where your money goes. With every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/BA2022. That's uncommongoods.com/BA2022 for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Choo-choo pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Dylan White, up there in the great white north. Any snow on the ground, Dylan? We got snow here in Massachusetts. That's why I asked.
There's a little bit of snow. We didn't get I don't know if you got that squall or it's coming soon this week, but we didn't get that much, and apparently this week's just gonna be cold and not much snow. But it's cold.
We're supposed to get like some seriously Arctic temperatures here in New England in the coming days, week or so. So not looking forward to that, especially when it's already starting in December. But you know what is hot, Dylan?
Segway man.
That would be the Blue Jays. They signed my cousin, Cody Ponce, spelt differently, my phonetic cousin, Cody Ponce. He's been over in the KBO for a few years. Another nice signing for the Blue Jays, quite frankly. So more back end of the rotation, maybe in some like long relief situations as well. But it's another arm. It's another potential starter. It's another major league quality guy with really good breaking ball, if I recall correctly. And not like great fastball shape, but good velocity. So it's like 5-7, if I'm recalling correctly once again. Probably can play. I thought when I looked at him earlier this offseason that it seemed like it would be an interesting signing for somebody. So I feel like he could fit into a bunch of different roles with his arsenal. Has had success in the KBO. Was actually dominant over there. But at the same time, it is the KBO. So we need to see how much it translates. But we have seen guys come back from overseas, guys like, you know, Merrill Kelly, for example, and, you know, even Miles Mikolas to a degree. Dan Straley, I think, came back over from the KBO and had like a decent year or two. And there's like one more that I'm...
Fetty is KBO, right?
Huh?
Eric Fetty was KBO?
Yes, and I think Fetty was the most recent one. That was one that escaped my mind. Thank you. There has been some success with these guys. So what's your thoughts as a Blue Jays fan and sort of what's the fantasy take on him? He shouldn't be available in FYPDs, I believe, because he's over rookie limits already from his previous time in affiliated Major League Baseball. So where does it sort of fall in terms of where you're acquiring this guy in Dynasty, if he's available as like a free agent or something like that in your league? How aggressive would you be?
I love him. I mean, so all these KBO guys, the guys you named, Kyle Hart even is one of those that pops up. And, like, you know, Yoshida I was a big fan of. Like, I always end up liking these guys because in redraft, people fade them more than I think they should. I had Fetty in a lot of places when he came over, et cetera. And so I think it's always a good value. I was looking at some numbers because I have Ponce in three DCs already. And his strikeout minus walk was better. It was like 30%. And the best strikeout minus walk of someone coming over was Fetty at 24%. So he just blows through that. And like you said, he throws 95, 97. He touches 98. Like, it's not like it's by like guile and finesse that he's doing this. He's got the stuff underneath. So like Fetty had a 3.3 ERA when he came over, like a 4, like xFIP, like all the underlying was kind of like 4. So if you take that as kind of just a reasonable target for Ponce, he's definitely worth it. So expecting he'll be better than that, I think, is great. And the fact that, you know, the Jays already have Cease, Gausman, Savage, Bieber, like he's a fifth starter, so there's no pressure on this guy. If you're signing him for 3 years, $10 million per year, that's like one war. Like, he's going to get one war. Like, it's a great deal, I think. So they're also showing that, you know, the Jays are willing to spend, all that stuff. So I like him a lot. So I would take him if he's in FYPD. I take him in the first round for sure. I'm usually in the back of the first of FYPD drafts just because I usually finish near the top. So if he was available, definitely I'd pick him up. If he's not available because of he's not in FYPDs. But I mean, like, the way my FYPDs are is you can take anyone that's available. Like, you can take major leaguers that are like in the pool that weren't picked up at the end of the year. So I would still pick him in the first round for sure. I would pick him in the first half of the first round because I think there's some upside there. So I can see, like, if you just do the translations of KBO to major league, like, his ERA is like going to be like 3.5, like something ridiculous. Like, it's actually so good because he kind of breaks the model. So if that's a possibility, then I think it's worth taking. So I like it. He's 29, I think, or like, he's not like 35. So I think that it's a good signing. So I think all in all, as you can take from this, I like him a lot.
There you go. Happy Jays fan, Dylan White here. But yeah, I think, you know, it's kind of like hitting in the right in the middle of like two Venn diagrams, like in terms of Jays fandom and import fandom. You generally, as you said, like the NPB players as well as the KBO players. So there you go. Another signing to talk about. We got some crosstown traffic. Devin Williams moving from the Bronx out to Flushing. He moves to the Mets. We'll see what this means for that bullpen, but an interesting move nonetheless. So what's your read here on the Devin Williams news?
I like it. I mean, there's reports immediately that the Mets, that doesn't mean their Mets aren't going to re-sign Edwin Diaz. Definitely makes it easier if they don't for them and their fan base. I like it. I think it's a lateral move. I think Devin Williams, all his underlying was great last year, even though he, you know, lost the job for the Yankees and much maligned and booed and all that stuff. But like, his strikeout per nine has always been good for years. His ERA has all been good, his underlying, all that. So I think it's good. And I actually wanted to talk about for a second, like in redraft, just the philosophy, Cody Ponce and Devin Williams, it kind of moves into this philosophy I'm about to talk about, is that people are always fading uncertainty. Like, Devin Williams is going in like the 8th, 9th, because, you know, what if he signs with the Dodgers and he's not the closer? I don't want to waste draft capital on that. But if you look at the underlying, it was maybe there's two teams that would sign Devin Williams and he would not be the closer. So like, now that he's signed, he's going in like the 4th round. He was like the 3rd closer going off the board. Now the Ponce is signed with the Jays, like he was being taken in like the 40th round. And then now he's going to be in the 20s for sure, even earlier. So I think it's an opportunity in a redraft. This is a bit of a like a strategy thing, is to take guys. I mean, obviously you want to take guys who you think are going to sign and be worth more than where you're taking them. But like, the crowd is quite good. If you just draft by ADP, you're going to have a solid team. I think in aggregate, people are very smart with the ADPs. So when you're drafting early, like now, if you can find the guys who are going to jump up in ADP from now to the spring training, so like the Connor Griffins, the JJ Weatherholtz, like you were talking about last couple of weeks, like they're going in the 19th round, 20th round. If in spring training happens and they're looking like they may get a job, they're going to be taken in the 10th round. They're going to be taken in the 8th round if they make it out of spring training. So like, these are the guys you take in the early rounds, the Devin Williams who are unsigned yet, Ryan Helsley is another one we're probably going to talk about soon that he signed. And now that he's closer, he's going from the 11th round to the 6th round or whatever. So it's a good strategy to just take guys that you think have a very good chance of popping up in ADP. Like a good example from last year, which didn't work out, was like Sasaki. Wasn't sure if he was going to post. So people were like taking him in the 25th round. And then as soon as he posted, he's like going in the 8th round. Like you take that shot in the 25th round, take Roki Sasaki, because you're going to gain so many rounds of ADP value. And it's going to pay off in general over time. That's my rant.
There you go. Rant over. We have some more closers that have signed, Dylan. Ryan Helsley to the Orioles. There were some rumors that he was potentially going to be signed by certain teams and then used as a starter. That is not the case, that he is going to be a closer in Baltimore, from all reports. What's your take on Helsley moving to Baltimore? I think it's a pretty good fit and a team that's kind of been looking to fill that role since, you know, Bautista has sort of dealt with injury over the last few seasons.
I have him in a couple of DCs already for exactly the things I was just saying, that half the time, more than half the time, he's probably going to sign and be the closer. I have him in my two dynasties as well. And when he got traded to the Mets and was kind of the setup man in theory for Edwin Diaz, I was not concerned. I mean, it wasn't helpful for this year, but I knew he'd be a closer next year, I'm sure. So I have him in a bunch of places, because if you miss the first like sure thing closers like Andres Munoz, Mason Miller, maybe Cade Smith apparently is considered a sure thing. It's kind of a crapshoot. So these are guys, Devin Williams, Ryan Helsley, who have a pretty good shot of probably being a sure thing closer in a couple weeks when they sign. So I have Helsley in a bunch of spots. So I like it. I think the Andrew Kittredge trade was a bit of a trap for people when he went to the Orioles from the Cubs. And people thought, oh, here we go. Here's the closer because Bautista's out. It's not going to be Keegan Aiken. Andrew Kittredge is the guy. Obviously, that was a trap. Those people who jumped him in ADP have lost out because Ryan Helsley's now the closer. So I think he's a sure thing. His fastball was hit hard last year, and there's some underlying things that are a bit concerning, but it's still like basically 100 miles an hour. The stuff plus have always been good for it. Good slider too. I think he'll be a solid 20 plus save guy, and that's kind of all you want to be guaranteed.
I cannot argue with that, Dylan. I think that once you're past sort of that threshold, that's especially at like the draft day, that's all you can really hope for, right? Like there's a certain point where it's like you're not expecting 40 save seasons consistently. And if you're paying those prices more often than not, you can be severely disappointed from a couple of bad weeks, a bad month, an injury. A lot can go wrong for closers. And we talked about this, I think, when we released the 500, just in terms of how we sort of view closers from a dynasty perspective, that it's very, you know, short sort of viewed, short-sighted with all those guys. But interesting stuff nonetheless. All right, we're going to get into third baseman, dynasty third baseman. That was the rankings that were out on the site this week. We're going to talk a little bit about the top 10, maybe a couple names that we really like. But first, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
KP, the website is chubbyshorts.com. The brand is Chubbies, but it's not just shorts.
Yeah, don't be fooled by the website's name. This is a one-stop shop for all things that I love. Swimming trunks, golf polos, and even flannels. It fits me perfectly. One-stop shop is the place to go.
Yes, sir. KP, I've been wearing their flannel overshirt. It's like my favorite flannel, and your softest sweater having a little baby. It's the best of both worlds. Classic flannel look with the warmth of a fleece, and we know it's that time of year to pull that off. The Chubbies flannel overshirt. It feels like your favorite flannel, but with the warmth of a cozy sweater. And for a limited time, Chubbies is giving our listeners 20% off your purchase at Chubbies with the promo code FOUL at checkout. But if it's Black Friday, skip the code. Take advantage of an even bigger markdown during their exclusive Black Friday sale. Just head to chubbyshorts.com and make sure to support the show by telling them that Foul Territory sent you.
All right, Dylan, we are back. We are talking about third base prospects. Excuse me, third baseman for Dynasty. seeing this on YouTube. I just had a brain fart. It's late at night. Sorry. We're talking dynasty third baseman. Might talk some prospects as well in there. Never know. But let's get into it, Dylan. Number one, it's a guy that was a prospect for a while that we ranked and were aggressive with. Junior Caminero is our number one third baseman. What are your thoughts on Caminero going forward? Just a ton of power, 21 years old, hits 45 home runs, driving in a ton of runs. Looks like a true middle of the order bat and could be that for a decade and a half with the age that he is at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really go wrong at all. He's got literal top of the chart bat speed. He barrels in like the top 15% hard hit rates up there, and he's 22 with 45 home runs. So, of course, it doesn't work this way, but if you're hitting 45 home runs at age 22, you're going to hit 50 home runs in your peak in some career years over the next, like you said, a decade. Like, he won't even be in his prime for 5 years. So he's a top of the dynasty rankings type guy. I would trade Judge for him probably, even though we have them neck and neck and Judge slightly ahead, just because the 10-year age gap. Obviously, in 5 years, Caminero will probably be doing better than Judge. So you want to catch them as they cross over. So Junior Caminero, great, has been top five prospect in the minors for quite some time, and now after full season and 45 home runs, it's exactly kind of how it was scripted.
Yeah, and even though number two, Jose Ramirez, is obviously quite a bit older at this point, just keeps on staying really productive. How many more years do you think he has of this level of production? Or do you sort of anticipate the steals and the power maybe ticking down a little bit over the next couple of years? I do think that it's sort of Caminero, Ramirez, and then we can talk about Jazz. We talked about last week, Manny Machado, and some of those other guys. But I almost feel like there's like even clear tiers within like the top three or four where I almost feel like you'd line up 10 dynasty managers and they might actually line these four guys up exactly like this each and every time. So what are your thoughts on Ramirez, and when's the right time to maybe try to trade him? Is right now a good time to maybe try to sell at, I wouldn't say peak value because that probably would have been a couple of years ago, but at least at a level of value that he's still maintaining as like a first to second round type of player, and the return that you could definitely get on a guy like that?
I think he's still got a couple years in him. He's still 44 last year and 41 the year before. He got 6.3 WAR, 6.5 the year before. When you're in your 30s, you generally like slip like half a WAR per year. So he can slip and he'd be 5.5, slip again, 5 WAR, slip again, 4.5 WAR. Like, that's still an extremely good player. His WRC plus is at like over 130, 140. Like, that's going to, you drop it, 5%, even 10%, you're still going to be an above average hitter for 3 years. So I think in a 3 year window, I think he's still going to be extremely valuable. I think he's still going to be, a top third base, a top hitter, to be honest. Maybe he won't steal as much, but I just, from watching Jose Ramirez and me having him in a couple places for a while, he likes to steal and he likes to, like, he's kind of flashy that way and he wants to keep those numbers up. So like, he would, I can't speak to his mindset, but like, out of like stubbornness, he would want to steal and be a 30-30 guy for a long time. That's something that you'd want. That's what it seems like. So I think I could see him being 30-30 or thereabouts for the next 3 years. At that point, maybe get out from underneath him. But, I wouldn't trade him now thinking that, the wheels are going to fall off at any moment. I don't think that's going to happen for a while.
Yeah, good answer. I just, I feel like it's kind of an interesting question because he is getting a little bit older and you're still getting 30-30 seasons, right? So, and there is some element, I think, of knowing when to sort of sell with your stars and dynasty. And, it looks like sometimes you're packing it in when in reality, by August of the next year, it can look like a really savvy move. We talked about Jazz a lot last week. I wouldn't put him in the Ramirez tier at this point. Couple more 30-30 seasons. Perhaps he is there. Certainly don't put him in the Cameron Arrow camp, just in terms of how much he can produce in terms of power. But I would have him above Manny Machado, Jordan Westberg, Austin Riley, Matt Shaw. And I really think it drops off heavily after Riley. I wouldn't put Matt Shaw even in the same conversation as some of those guys in terms of the production. Is Riley right here maybe like kind of the sleeper of this group now that he's down at six? Especially if they have, you know, Acuna back for a full season, sort of the gang's back together. He's healthy. Is there a chance he kind of bounces back in a big way in 2026? I don't think it's possible, no?
I mean, it's definitely possible. He's been excellent for a long time, and he's still, I think he's 29 now, 30? 20. He's heading into his age 29 season, so he's not old. He had, I'm just looking at it now, in 2021, 33 home runs, 2022, 38 home runs, 2023, 37 home runs. Hit above 273 in all those seasons, had an OBP above 345 in all those seasons. So he's not that far away from it. What happened was like 2024 was kind of a lost season for the Braves. And I at least kind of just felt, okay, so 2025 is going to be the season. Acuna is going to come back and Albies is going to bounce back and Michael Harris is going to bounce back and Matt Olson's going to bounce back. And it was even worse for Riley. And he also had some nagging side injuries that bothered him. So, you know, he used to be like, I just listed that three year run where it was hit and hit for like incredible power. And he's in his mid 20s. Now, you know, it's not a sure thing. 16 home runs and 19 home runs the last 2 years, some knocking injuries kind of knocking him about. I don't know. I'm a bit worried. He's going to turn 30 soon, but him to attain those levels, because he's already done it and already did it for 3 years, is definitely, definitely possible. So we may be fading him a bit too far here. He definitely has the upside to jump back into the top five. If he hits another 30 home runs and goes 280, like for sure, and only being 30 years old, like that's better than Machado. So that's definitely in the tank. It's in the cards. But, you know, I'm a bit conservative here because there's a lot of name value for Riley, and you'd have to pay a pretty steep price for him still, I think. And I think it's, you know, maybe 50-50 that this is what he is, or he jumps back up to that level. So just keep that in mind when you try to evaluate him.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if the price is going to be cheap enough at this point, because he's had a few of those seasons, and you know, maybe the shine's off the Braves hitters a little bit, that he's going to be a much more, you know, a obtainable player. Like the access that you're going to be able to have after, you know, later, a little bit later in drafts than you would have a few years ago, with the ability to sort of, you know, hit 30 home runs, you know, with a ton of RBIs and a good batting average. I still don't think it's outrageous to think he could bounce back from that.
Definitely not. But his strikeout rate has gone up from like the last 3 years, 24% up to 29%. And the walk rate has dropped from 8% down to 6% over the last 3 years. So he's kind of heading in the wrong direction. But I like I said, he could easily be a 35 home run guy, 280 batting average. And so, you know, maybe just point out to the guy you're trying to trade him from that, hey, the strikeout rate and the walk rate are going the wrong direction.
Yeah, that's what my point is I don't think you have to like pay through the nose for it at this point, where a guy at 29 years old having a good, healthy offseason and figuring out where he needs to be again with his swing, and getting a little batted ball luck, I don't think is impossible. But he had a fair amount of that last year at a 337 BABIP. So that's not a problem. But yeah, I don't know. I think these are it's like Kyle Schwarber. Kyle Schwarber was DFA'd and forgotten about, right? Like those guys that have power like this that show it in their 20s, those are the guys that I think can potentially bounce back. And when the price tag drops, that's more what my argument is. He's going to be my target anyway, so you can read that on the site today. The rest of the top 10 is really uninspiring. You know, Matt Shaw, Mikel Garcia, Alex Bregman, Royce Lewis. I got to be honest, Dylan. Maybe Garcia. I could roster Garcia. I really don't want any part of Shaw, Bregman, or Lewis at this point. I'd almost give me Addison Barger.
Yeah. I like it. I had Garcia as the guy to target. My rationale was he's got elite bat-to-ball skills, and he plays very good defense. So his floor is high. He hit fourth or higher in the batting lineup for like the last like third of the season. It's a good lineup. You know, Vinny Pasquantino, Sal, Bobby Witt, Carter Jensen on the horizon. Jack maybe will put it together. So he should get runs. So he's got a high floor. He's going to get playing time, and he's going to get runs. And I think my rationale in the article you'd read is that people are a bit skeptical. There's probably going to be regression because he had a career year in home runs, like 18 home runs and a bunch of stolen bases. And so people are thinking it's a one-off, he's going to regress. And so people are skeptical, which is probably true. There's a very good chance he'll regress. But if he does the same thing again, if he hits 15 home runs and steals 30 bases and is hitting at the top of the order, he's going to be worth a lot in Dynasty because it's now 2 years that he's done it. He's still quite young, and he's in that lineup I talked about with the high floor and the good skills that don't age very well. Or that age very well, that don't fall off as you age. So he's going to be extremely good. There's a high outcome, a non-trivial outcome, where he will be extremely valuable in Dynasty. He's also at third base and steals a lot of bases, which doesn't happen that often. Matt Shaw will steal 20, but there aren't that many people who will steal 20 or more, like Caleb Durbin maybe, but I don't know if you want to pay too much for that. So this is kind of like a unicorn profile, which I like, other than, you know, the Jazz and the Jose Ramirez. So I like those guys that are kind of not really the guys you expect in at third base, like Barger, a lot of home runs, but no power, and maybe not the great, or a lot of home runs, no speed, and an okay batting average, but you're going to get the same from Isaac Paredes, Mark Vientos, like all these guys that are in that area. They're all kind of the same profile. And these guys like Michael Garcia, who are kind of a different profile, like, so. All that to say is there's a chance that he will duplicate what he did or come close enough to what he did that his value is going to be extremely good because he's still very young. And his floor is so high anyway that his worst case outcome is still going to be reasonable.
Yeah. I definitely
put you to sleep. I'm sorry about that.
No, you didn't put me to sleep at all. No. I've been writing handbook chapters nonstop for days and Rule 5 draft stuff. So a little out there. A little high on my Rule 5 draft gas. I don't know. There's some cheap power, I think, kind of lurking in third base. It's just, it's a Russian roulette, like after 10, where it's like, I don't know, Paredes could have a really nice season. Barger could have a really nice season. Mark Vientos could hit 35 home runs like if he had enough playing time. Suarez could end up in a good place and hit a bunch of home runs. Even Noel V. Marte had a really nice bounce-back season last year. Matt Chapman from year to year can be really good for half a season, right?
Yeah.
Where that falls apart. Jordan Lawler is kind of like a mystery box. Like we don't necessarily know. Brett Beatty was better last year than he had been. Like there's a lot of guys here where I think you can look really negatively or really, really optimistically. But there are no guarantees whatsoever. That it almost makes the two Japanese players in Murakami and Akimoto maybe potentially more interesting than a lot of these guys ranked ahead of them. When we were doing the rankings and I wrote those guys up, and I kind of did this section from whatever, like Bomb down through Vargas. Yeah, Vargas. And it's kind of a close-knit tier. And it's like, I could see banking on the Japanese players being a little more upsiding than some of those guys. At least the players that are between like Chapman and them.
Yeah, I think.
You never know. They're you know, but there was Meyer in that tier, who I think with full-time playing time and health, could have some upside. And I mentioned Lawler. At this point, I don't think Alec Baum is upside. Like, I just think he is what he is. Like, we're not going to get a 25 home run year on Alec Bohm.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That glob of players, they all have warts of different flavors. And it's like, do you want to go for upside? And then some, maybe like Lawler or Meyer, they have a chance for upside. You go for like this year's production, maybe over others, like Max Muncy, Matt Chapman, maybe they're a bit older. Or do you take the kind of flyer, like on the Japanese? So like they're kind of more unknown. It's kind of what flavor of risk profile do you want to take? And that's kind of how you can separate it out.
Yeah. I think that makes sense for sure. There's just there's a lot of different names to to parse through that I feel like maybe I'm wrong here. I feel like from like 13 down to 29, you could throw all these guys up in the air, and if they landed in a completely different order each time, like that's how it could be next season. Like I felt like I had a lot of trouble, even in comparison to like second base, first base, catchers. We'll do shortstops and outfielders in over the next couple of weeks. There's far more like clear tiers there. There's a lot of guys in third base that you maybe don't even want to like any part of, right? Like it's not fun to roster Carlos Correa. It's not fun. I even think like Caleb Durbin isn't that fun to roster. Like there's not that much upside unless he steals 30 bases. You know, we probably saw about as many home runs as he could possibly hit in the season last year. Max Muncy at this point, like he's never played like 150 games in his career. So, you know, he's going to miss a ton of games and he's starting to wear down. He's 35 years old. Josh Young, whew, his best season was in 2023 as a rookie, and he hasn't been good at all since. Yeah. Right. Miguel Vargas was much better last season. I still don't know what to expect next year with him. Brady House. Oh man. I mean, if you could figure out when Brady House is going to finally show up and be the prospect that everyone thought he was like when he got drafted, I don't think it's going to happen at this point, but he does still hit the ball hard. It's just, there's no approach and kind of bad launch angles. So it's like, I go through all of these guys, Dylan, and it's like a burn book. I'm just trashing all of them.
Well, I mean, I think it's fair. I think there are definite probable outcomes where the bottom just falls out of a bunch of those guys. Like if Correa has a bad year where he's injured and only hits like 200, like he's not going to be in the top 21. If Durbin is kind of a utility guy and gets 200 plate appearances, he's not even going to be in the 500, I'm sure. Royce Lewis, like it's kind of a make or break season for him, I think, because he was like a 152 WRC plus a couple years ago. And then last year he was an 85 WRC plus, 400 plate appearances. Like he played the most and he was below average hitter. So what is he? If he has another bad year and he'll be 27, so he's getting up there, like he may not be a guy that we would want anymore or your league mates may want. So like they're definite probable outcomes, like plausible outcomes, not probable, plausible outcomes where there's the bottom just falls out of a lot of these guys.
Yeah. As we just went through, that's kind of the gist of the story here. But you know what, Dylan? We're going to wrap this up. We've gone through enough third baseman. You can go in. We covered a large chunk of the rankings, more so than we probably did in previous weeks. But you can go on to baseballamerica.com and read those. We also have our targets, our sleepers, and our fades for this year. Probably hinted at a little bit of those throughout this episode. But once again, Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. My name is Jeff. That's Dylan. Thanks for tuning in.
Cheers.